Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. And what a lovely day. It's the 25th of July. What's the 25th of July?
A national holiday.
I think it's somebody's birthday, isn't it? Oh, my God. Alan Shartok is it's his birthday today. We don't need to tell you how old he is, but he's another year older.
And deeper in debt.
No. old Tennessee Ernie Ford reference.
Yes.
How's it going? How's it feel to be birthday? Just lift that up a little bit.
Oh, yeah. It's pretty good, actually. I was at mile marker 15.1 yesterday, and all of a sudden, whoom, and the car starts to rock like crazy, and I pull it over to the right-hand side, and there's a blowout of the tire. And, you know, it was a good example of things to come.
Well,
a birthday
it's
blowout.
It's going to be a good year.
See, when I asked you this morning how things went, you said, well, I had a blowout. And I figured, well, yeah, you blow out your candles. They're like, that's it. That's what you do on your birthday. And more to the story. But, happy birthday.
Well, thank you.
Very nice.
Thank you all. You're
happy
all
birthday.
Very, very nice. I appreciate that.
No,
well, maybe you're not so nice. no, you are.
Yeah. How are we? No.
Tell us how you really feel, Alan.
No, you're all nice.
He's wearing a lovely birthday shirt.
This isn't it beautiful?
It is a great
this
yeah.
is
My
his
daughter
gift.
Sarah sent this to me.
Okay.
I got it yesterday. It is a picture of all the grandchildren on my shirt. Different pictures of.
So it's a black t-shirt, and there's three separate like Polaroid type images on the shirt.
Yeah.
One with each grandchild.
Our listeners would appreciate seeing Alan in such a loving moment with each of his grandchildren, showing complete love. It's really quite warm
and exceptional, right?
Yeah. I think it's your true colors. I do.
Well, you are being nice.
Okay. I saw the Mr. Rogers movie yesterday.
Oh,
no.
Oh my God.
That
isn't
gives
it great?
You warm fuzzies and then some.
Did you cry like a baby?
Oh, like a baby.
Yeah, oh, my God. Yeah. Couldn't get over it. Oh. Well, happy birthday, Alan. Let me introduce the rest of the crew today. First of all, I introduced at the top of the show that Chris Churchill was going to be in. And then Chris immediately heard his name on the radio and texted me and said, what?
No, I'm not.
Just kidding, Chris.
I had him on the schedule from last week. I never confirmed that, though, so that's completely my fault, and I apologize. But Chris will be with us next Tuesday, so apologies for that. Kaylin Brown is here. She is the professor of journalism at the College of St. Rose. She is also the communications department head, chair. What do you like to be called?
Chair. I think it's funny to be equated with a piece of furniture.
Which is funny because in your office you don't have a chair. You stand.
I do. I have a standing desk.
You have a standing
desk.
It's
so good for my back.
Yeah. Yes. So that's good. You're the chair. You're to the chair without a chair. And Jen Smith is here. She is from the Berkshire Eagle. She is also a fine journalist and is on the education beat, but pretty much covers everything.
It happens.
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm very well.
And then, of course, there's the birthday boy. Good morning, sir. How are you? Yes. All right. We'd love for you to write to us, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. You can write your letters to us, panel@wamc.org. And then if you want to write birthday greetings for Alan, we'll put those in a separate pile, and then we'll read those at the end. Does that sound good?
Yes.
All right.
There you go.
What if I don't get any?
I bet you'll get birthday greetings.
Let me write my contact list quickly.
Yeah. Please help us out. Yeah. Chris is free. Maybe he could write one. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the program, and thank you for being with us. Let us get to the news of the day. I don't know how much to make of the tape. Do you want to talk about the tape?
Sure.
Okay. I don't know how much to make of the tape because I don't really understand it, but
it's actually tapes,
but we have a tape that we heard. Go.
Wait a minute. Is it tapes or is it recordings? Are there any actual physical literal tapes? Can we please say recordings?
Oh, that
it's
is
not
a great
real tape.
Okay.
Because legally we should be precise, correct? So we are recording a radio show now. Is there a tape somewhere? Truly, is there a tape?
Well, I don't know. I mean, there is not a physical piece of tape, but it is a recording. But we always say we're taping you. I don't know. The New York Times says Cohen releases tape of Trump.
Okay.
And now I'm not
can't
saying
mess with the times, right?
Now I'm not saying they're the arbiter of all this, right. But
I feel like it's recordings. I want people to start using.
How about
that.
Audio?
Yeah.
That's what CNN has up right now.
So. Well, you know, it's like when people still say they drop a record. Well, in some cases they do now because vinyl's back, but most cases it's an album. It's a,
you
a
open
recording.
The door, so you know St. Rose has the St. Rose Rose record label, and that we literally do make vinyl albums
yes.
at the college.
Yes.
Yes. I just couldn't cool. resist.
Okay. All right. So President Trump's former lawyer, Michael Cohen, released a recording in which Mr. Trump appears to have knowledge about payments to a former Playboy model who said she had an affair with him. Mr. Cohen, who had been considered one of Mr. Trump's most loyal personal aides and the keeper of his secrets, is under investigation by federal authorities. A lot of questions here now. One is the fact that, well, why was Michael Cohen recording this conversation?
And why is it coming out now?
And why is it coming out now? It is a weird thing to have the, because everyone, the first thing, CNN has the tape. The quick question is, how did they get the tape? Well, Lanny Davis gave it to them.
Right.
So why did that work out? Anyway, So then
also, why did Trump lie? You forgot to ask that question.
Well, I was getting to that because Mr. Cohen is heard telling Mr. Trump that he will need to set up a company to arrange the payments. Mr. Trump then asked what financing will have to pay, Mr. Cohen said. Mr. Trump then appears to say, and this is where the question mark comes in, appears to say pay with cash. Mr. Cohen then says no, no. Now, the other way around,
it was Trump allegedly who said no to the paying with cash.
Correct. Yes.
No.
Mr. Trump appears to say pay with cash, and Trump and Mr. Cohen says no, no.
Oh, interesting.
Yes.
No.
And then Rudy Giuliani alleges that Trump said don't before that.
Don't pay.
Much like last week, I was saying no to
double negative.
No questions, not. To the answer to that question. So there we are. Lanny Davis, a lawyer for Mr. Cohen and a longtime supporter of Bill and Hillary Clinton, told the New York Times Tuesday night that Mr. Cohen released the tape because he is, quote, on a new path. It's a reset button to tell the truth and to let the chips fall where they may. Ms. McDougal, this is the woman who was not paid, or she was paid. Am I right on this? She was not paid.
Was paid $150,000?
No, she was never, but she never received money, right?
By the National Enquirer for her story in the summer of 2016. According to the Times,
okay, she was paid.
Was paid.
Okay.
She got the money from them, and the question was, what was their role in it?
And then they buried the story.
Yeah.
That's right. Okay.
Called Catch and Release. Or Catch and Kill. Catch and Kill.
Yes.
Catch and Release is the immigrants. Catch and Kill is buy the story and kill the story.
So paid $150,000 by the National Enquirer for her story in the summer of 2016. The tabloid, which often gave Mr. Trump favorable coverage, then did not publish the story. According to people close to Mr. Cohen and Mr. Trump, the two men were discussing on the tape a second payment to the Enquirer that would continue to keep Ms. McDougal from speaking publicly about Mr. Trump. So that's what I thought. So that payment, I don't think, ever went through,
that second payment. Okay.
On the recording, Mr. Trump shows some familiarity with the deal between Ms. McDougal and American Media, the publisher of the Enquirer, and does not act as if he's only learning about it then. When the Times reported on the existence of the payment on Friday, Mr. Trump's personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, said the tape would provide exculpatory indicating that the conversation was the first time that Mr. Trump had heard about the deal that McDougal struck with AMI. On the tape, Mr. Cohen raises the possibility of creating a separate company to buy the rights to Ms. McDougal's story from AMI. I need to open up a company for the transfer of all that info regarding our friend David, Mr. Cohen is heard saying. David Pecker is the chairman of AMI. He has acknowledged being personal friends with Mr. Cohen as well as Mr. Trump. On Wednesday morning, otherwise known as today, Mr. Trump complained on Twitter about the tape cutting off while I presumably saying positive things. What kind of lawyer would tape a client so sad? Is this a first? Never heard of it before. Why was the tape so abruptly terminated while I was presumably saying positive things? I hear there are other clients and many reporters that are taped. Can this be so too bad? !
Well, you know, I think the important point here is that Trump has been saying all along that he did not have an affair with this woman. That's very important because it's just one more lie that we have heard from him.
So let me just play devil's advocate. Just because you pay to get it out of the media, does that mean that you were admitting to the alleged affair?
No. No. No, it doesn't. But why would you pay? And so, you know, there certainly is that. Mr. Pecker has what? What are you shaking?
Nothing.
Your head
I'm on? Just. I happy birthday. Go
Isn't
ahead.
That his name?
Happy birthday.
Isn't that his
yes,
name?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
I don't know why you're shaking your head.
I know you. That's why. I'm
So Mr. Pecker turns out to be not a. Turns out not to be a role model for, you know, for publishers and newspaper people. It's the fact is that a lot of people thought he was doing it just to help the president. But apparently now there is some speculation that he was to be paid, you know, hard cash or money for this. That doesn't make him look good.
No. I mean, and there is the case. There's some question as to whether of the other arrangements that AMI and the Trump camp have had.
And Rudy Giuliani, a friend of Mr. Pecker's, is again pulling this nonsense. He's in the running in my book for the worst person in the world. But I don't know what else to tell you except that. He is once again out front shilling for the president.
I think it's interesting to just pay attention to the fact that AMI is a media company that's problematic in the first place, but the fact that they are taking money to kill stories should help at least people in the public understand the difference between credible media and media that's absolutely not.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, you can make a very good point.
Yeah. And I mean, again, I feel like this is just sort of another distraction of what is really going on here and what, you know, really needs to, if we're investigating the president for certain things, there are other things to kind of really focus on. But, and it, you know, I think if anything, this could potentially be offered as a piece of evidence in a timeline to put a time frame together about who knew what when.
Sure.
And, you know, what's it? Before, was it after the presidency and whatnot? But I agree with Kaylin too that it's just a matter of most credible outlets do not pay these sums of money to affect its content.
Also, we're also put in an uncomfortable position where we can't forget that Cohen's also a snake, right? Mm-hmm. I mean. We can't lose sight of that.
It's the president raises an interesting question. What kind of lawyer records a meeting that's supposed to be, right, a confidential conversation? A kind of lawyer who maybe thinks that his client is suspect? Mm-hmm. Question mark?
Well, meaning if you don't trust your client implicitly, meaning that if you feel that there may be a reason at some point he will come against you, and if you have that evidence to say, well, this is what you said, well, yes, that does.
But if I were building a case of any kind, there's too much he said, she said, or he said in this case of what's going on. And I think it's too murky to really prove one thing or another when you have all this other kind of body of evidence and conversations and things documented to make a point.
Well, there's one other thing that's going on here, of course. This is all about the salacious stuff, or as a writer has already called it, the shiny that we're tracing down. But if he's recording all of these conversations, what of substance that may lead to a Mueller, in-depth conversation about Trump's wrongdoing is also on those tapes. And I think that's why Lanny Davis has released this as a warning.
Although the president does make a good point in the sense of why was it cut off. And I was wondering that last night when I heard it on CNN. Interesting that they gave it to Chris Cuomo to break, by the way. But I was you do wonder, because it is very abruptly cut off.
Right. Well, and I think that's the point that, that Giuliani made this morning. But I think that's also ties into the bigger issue of the importance of having these transcripts of any conversation that is had. And right now there are transcribers that are being left out of rooms to, you know, they definitely weren't in Helsinki at that summit. So it's hard for us to really know what's going on aside if these little pieces of evidence trickle forth.
We are going to take a break. When we come back, we will get to letters and we will talk about other topics as well. Kaylin Brown, Jen Smith, and the birthday boy, Alan Chartok, all here today. We welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. Keep your letters short, to the point. Proofread them so we know what you're trying to say. And we'll get to all of those in just a few moments after this short break.
If I had a bell, I'd ring it in the morning. I'd ring it in the evening.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. This is the playlist in your car, isn't it? This is what's just playing.
Actually, I do.
Yeah.
If I got into the Prius
right now, this would be playing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have the Weaver's channel on my Pandora. I do.
That's great. That's fantastic.
That's good stuff.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, let's go to some letters, and then and then we will move on to other topics. And as I mentioned, as we said at the top of the show, birthday greetings we'll certainly welcome, and we'll read those at the end of the segment. And we're off. Let's go.
Okay, here we go. Matt says, Cohen, panel, Cohen attended one of the worst law schools in the country, but Trump only hires the best people. Debbie says, according to the New York Times, Melania was caught. I love this story, by the way. Melania was caught watching CNN on Air Force One.
Yes.
New rule, Fox only. New rule, Fox only. And he apparently went off. He got very angry that they had it on her television. Right.
She can watch what she wants to watch, right?
Well, yep. but that only helps CNN to have that news. And who leaked that one? Right?
Jim Sciutto.
Kathy says, Cohen recordings. So I interpreted, quote, David to be Donald J. Trump's alter ego, not Mr. Pecker. Didn't he use, quote, David in the dealings with Stormy? Maybe I'm wrong. Beats me.
I don't know. Oh, I had a list of his aliases, and now I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't think that's correct, though. I think they're right on that one.
Yeah. Okay, and John says, why is the panel chasing the shiny? Well, the panel's being distracted by the latest...
I'm sorry. She's right. One was David Dennison. Yeah. That was one of the names that he used. And then John Barron and John Miller were his other ones. Okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Why is the panel chasing the shiny? Well, the panel is being distracted by the latest salacious Trump news. Trump tweets that Russia is going to hack the midterms to favor Dems. He is setting up to invalidate any gains that the Democrats get. I'd love to hear Alan's take on this. Well, it's, John, you're so right. It is so upsetting that he just lies. He lies like a flat rug.
I agree with that writer that there are a lot of shiny objects and we should try not to get distracted, but they all add up to a body of information that demonstrates that this president is ill-equipped to be in the position he's in.
Yes, and who is he? Who is the man? It's the character of the man that counts for so much in terms of where this country is going. He walks into a room with Putin, and we have no idea what was said there, right? He deals with Kim Jong-un, and we don't have any sense of that one either. So it is incredibly important with a man with this much power that we know who he is, and we call him for what he is. It seems to me
that's the issue. And I would call that tweet another shiny thing, in the fact that the president neglected, if that was such a major concern of his, to say anything at the Helsinki summit about that. Nor has there been any policy to shore up counter cyber plans.
But I love John's point. He is setting up to invalidate any gains that the Democrats get. There was the polling, by the way, Joe, you and your magic machine may find this. But the polling is showing the Democrats are doing extremely well on a number of levels.
I have to look it up, but I believe it was an NPR PBS poll, right?
Not the least of which is the excitement among the people who might sit on their cans otherwise, but who are going to get out in this election. Now, in my conversation with John Faso the other day, I brought up the fact that the Democrats have said that they have a poll that shows Delgado 7 points ahead. And he, of course, dismissed that as being Democratic hoaxism and the rest of it. But if anything like that is true, it could really portend a huge shift, a real realigning election in the way the House is constituted.
I mean, there's going to be tooth and nail fighting on in either side to make gains and fight for every single point that you get at the polls.
Well, think about the Fox. Think about this election in the 19th district. That seat, that one seat, could mean the difference between the Republicans and the Democrats controlling the House of Representatives. So that while John Faso is talking about rap music, you know, and coming from outside of the district, there is this other issue, which is, forget about the individuals, even though, you know, I happen to think highly of Delgado. Forget about the individuals. Think strategically as to whether or not the House of Representatives, which is the one thing that could control Trump. Right now you have government completely in the hands of the Republicans. So one has to vote that way, it seems to me.
Well, I think the other thing you can't neglect is just the voters' attitudes themselves, and you have to talk to issues that are going to affect voters and going to get those underrepresented or people who had sat out the last times to the polls this time. I think if you look at any election that's happened over the past year and a half across the country, you've had a lot of upsets because people sure. ran on those kitchen table issues versus just the politics and who you're aligned with. You know, we've seen both Trump candidates prevail, as we have with Kemp, but we've seen some of his candidates fall.
I hope you're right.
More.
I mean, I hope you're right that people are paying attention to issues. I am less, you know, committed to that concept than I am about somebody who is carrying the message and carrying it eloquently and well. And, you know, you begin to worry a little bit about how much passion there is in all of this. So for example, we saw the example in Great Barrington when Warren showed up of a regular contributor to this panel he calls a lot, shoving this microphone in the despicable protester's face. That isn't going to help the cause,
no.
In my opinion. Yeah. You look puzzled. Are you?
I'm not. I'm just listening to hear where you're going next. I am also ready to move on from Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm. Are you? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So that's John's letter. And then Mary said, according to the New York Times, I see. Good morning, panel. And then it says, and happy birthday, Alan. And that's crossed out. According to the New York Times.
They're probably going
to
save it for the end.
Want to see that piece of paper. Yeah.
According to the New York Times and The Hill, the POTUS has forbidden anyone aboard, to watch CNN, according to his own wife, including his own wife. Domestic abuse experts describe this type of control as a sign of psychological abuse. That's an interesting point.
Well,
you know, I mean, I've often wondered about control of the clicker in the home. You know, if there's one clicker, who gets the clicker? So that, you know,
I think taking that, I understand your point. I think taking that to
a little out of context.
I think taking that to a degree where you are then, as this letter writer points out, of domestic abuse or psychological abuse may be a bit of a reach. But
yeah. We've circled back to the hush money for the women that he had affairs with.
But I think that's for the MO of Trump, though. I mean, he tries to control every element of his persona, his lifestyle, and the people who are involved in it. So I think you can't just limit it to one thing.
No, I think you know, if somebody says you can't watch what you want to watch, only what I want to watch, that's abusive. I think so.
There are a lot of ways abuse happens. many ways that abuse happens.
I think this is just one example of
this. On the media project, for example, you almost always abuse me.
Wait till tomorrow morning. We'll see.
All right.
Moving on.
Let's take a break. And when we come back, we'll continue our conversation, talk about other things, and we'll be right back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. It's Alan Chartok's birthday, which is why we're hearing his hits. Whoa, there you
thank Yahoo! You. Yahoo! Yippee!
That's right. And we're going to, again, if you'd like to write in some birthday greetings, we'll get to those at the end of the segment here in about 45 minutes or so. Kaylin Brown is here. Jen Smith is with us and Alan Chartok. And we're going to go to your letters and then we'll move on to other topics.
Okay, here we go. Seth says, being serious, I want to distinguish between productivity of promoting the good for all people and the promotion of the listeners of this station. Sometimes we can tell the panelists are rolling their eyes because of comments oozing sarcasm. Rolling your eyes at the actions of the president is pleasing to listenership and is pleasing to cure our deepest political issues. Thank you so much for your diligent and honest work. Tom says, Cohen, panel, what type of lawyer secretly records a conversation with a client, unquote? Some kind of unethical person who has private meetings with our country's foremost adversaries, undocumented. They deserve each other. And that's Tom from Gloversville, where nobody goes barehanded. Jim says, we're being recorded all the time. These days, you have to figure there's a high probability you're being recorded. You can't walk down the street, go to a place of business, or ring a doorbell without the probability you're being recorded. Think of all the events you go to where everybody has their phone up. Jim in Poughkeepsie.
Yeah, but this is different. I mean, this is a attorney-client privilege, and you would assume that if that is a private conversation, that there is not going to, A, be a tape, and if there is, it's certainly not going to be.
You know, Joe, there's another side to that one, and that is—
I mean, what if your doctor did that?
Well, it changes depending on who the participants are. This is a guy, a Cohen, who said that he would take a bullet for the president. And on the other hand, he knew from the very beginning what this president was, and he was recording him, obviously, from all the way. So I think you have to understand that these things are situational. They change from individual to individual.
Well, Cohen anticipated what eventually happened, that he would be put in a place where he needed to have some defense of himself, and ergo, the recordings of his client.
Ergo is correct. That's right.
Ergo, you to a birthday party.
Ergo.
Ergo, we go to the next letter.
Oh, thank you, Joe. And Michael says, the House. I agree that the Dems need, in capital letters, to take the House. But, B-U-T-T-T-T, will that further paralyze and polarize the government, making the arguing and dysfunction even uglier? Now, there's an interesting letter. So, in other words, if we call this guy for what he is, and if we talk about his lying and his duplicity and all the rest of it, and we get into a fight with him in order to get him out of there, get him, put a different way, get him the hell out of there, we would be seen as contributing to the dysfunction of government?
This program or WAMC?
No. I mean, in general. In other words, the longer this fight goes on, I think the letter writer is saying, the more dysfunction we are going to see in this government. So therefore, or as you would say, Kaylin, ergo. So therefore, we shouldn't, in order to preserve, you know, the country, we shouldn't go after Trump.
Well, I think preservation can happen on multiple fronts. I think that, again, the midterms are critical, and I think our listeners are well aware that the midterms are critical, but I think also in combination with people who want to work on improving the circumstances of our government need to be voting, need to be working with candidates that are going to hopefully help the democracy thrive, prosper, survive in some instances, but simultaneously
Mueller and other legal people are working to find the truth behind this presidency. You know, you see state's attorneys general, like the one here in New York, have filed lawsuits against this president.
What do you think?
Well, I think democracy is the key word in this regard, where if these allegations go uninvestigated, then what's the chance for anyone getting justice?
Agreed. Well, that's it. Yeah.
I agree.
All right. Let's move on to some other stories before we go to our top of the hour news break and find out what is happening. I did want to talk about the Farmers Aid package. Wow. This is an interesting story. The White House readies a plan for $12 billion in emergency aid to farmers caught in Trump's escalating trade war.
And that could be just a down payment, Joe.
The Trump administration announced up to $12 billion in emergency aid to farmers caught in an escalating trade war, seeking to temper growing Republican dissent over President Trump's trade policies. The aid is designed to help farmers facing tariffs in China, Mexico, and other countries that impose the levies on U.S. products in response to Trump's new tariffs on imported steel and aluminum. It is the latest sign that growing trade tensions between the U.S. and other countries are unlikely to end soon. White House officials say farmers will begin seeing payments by September, and they hope the payments will quiet protests by farm groups and lawmakers, many of them Republicans, who contend that Trump's confrontational trade policy is harming American farmers months before the 2018 midterm elections. How, that from the Washington Post, how do you say that we are going to have an aid package, emergency aid, for a plan that you started?
Well, that's the thing. It's a Band-Aid, or I think as Ben Sasse called it, a
Senator,
golden crutch for sturdying something that, you know, we cut the legs out from underneath. It's ridiculous. And I think, you know, I was very interested in the financial effects already that has happened to this industry. And if you look at the Farm Workers Union, the president there, Roger Johnson, had said that it's estimated just in the last month alone that farmers suffered $13 billion in loss due to these trade negotiations that are going on. So if you have a $12 billion bill that you're not even going to begin to start paying out until September, it's not helping anyone. And, you know, I think this really matters. This is an issue that really matters to people in our region because, you know, driving on my way over here, I drive through farmland. And from here to Vermont, to the Connecticut Valley, and over in my neck of the woods in Massachusetts. And of course, the folks out in the Midwest and West too, they're suffering now. And this is, if you talk to anyone who's been following this, this is just a short-term solution for a long-term problem.
And so you have the Republicans who philosophically have a bad problem with this thing. They have always talked about welfare for people, and now it's welfare for farmers, and they are in a bad philosophical spot, right?
Well, and it's tough for farmers, too, because I think historically, throughout this administration, they have supported Trump. They have been folks who have voted for him, and now when they're feeling the effects of the decisions that were made, and, you know, getting this as a solution, it questions where they're at. You know, if they can't put food on the table, if they can't send their kids to college or you know, have a house and home, you know,
but
will that affect the way that they take a stand? You know, right now, if you look at the comments from the unions in that sector and other representatives,
Forget about the unions, Jen. It's the Republican senators. For the first time, we are seeing them get up on their hind legs and say, no, this shall not pass. And by the way, the president has the ability to do it without them. So that's
fascinating. Well, I think those Republican senators, you know, they're representing to their constituents. I think that's part of the reason why they're saying things like
But think of how brilliant President Xi is in these negotiations. He goes after the farmers in the Republican red states, specifically soybeans and the rest of it. And he knows the chaos that he's going to cause, and he wins.
I think it's really important to note, too, that this aid package where is that money coming from?
Right.
It's coming from everyone who pays taxes is going to be paying for this manufactured bailout that was caused because of bad policy and decision making in the first place.
That's exactly, I think, what it is. And it doesn't pay out equally either. If you look at where the payouts go, it affects some farmers but not others. So yes, it made the major commodity crops, but in terms of produce farmers, they're not priorities for getting a payout, but yet they could possibly still be affected when you look at farm equipment and the aluminum tariffs and things like that. You know, this all comes into play. So it's a piecemeal piece of legislation, if anything.
We let us look at one more thing before we go to our break. This is from the business pages. Ivanka Trump is shutting down her fashion brand.
Yeah, one wonders what exactly. Well, we do know a lot of people decided that they were never going to buy anything.
And the stores stepped away. I mean, a lot of stores said we're not going to do this. More and more stuff was ending up in bargain basements.
And why did the stores do that, Joe, is the question.
Well, the stores were being boycotted because they were selling that product. And so the stores made a decision that they would rather not carry that brand than lose those customers. And they were becoming, you know, the middle of a political tug of war. It's very interesting that retail would end up in this position. I mean, it's happened before. There have been boycotts before. Mm-hmm. But it appears to have had some effect.
Well, of course, if you look at the revenues leading up to this, I mean, she was making money. I think in 2016, 2015, around there, she made, I think, $75 million alone in shoe sales. So, you know, you're doing okay up until
that
point.
That's good shoe money.
But I think the bigger thing that pops into my brain when you look at her statement yesterday was, you know, she's intending to ride out her time in Washington. And can she do it? What is her intentions? That is something that, you know, puzzles me.
Her statement said, after 17 months in Washington, I do not know when or if I will ever return to the business, but I do know that my focus for the foreseeable future will be the work I am doing here in Washington. So making the decision now is the only fair outcome for my team and partners.
Yeah, I think, you know, there wasn't much thought or care into the team and partners under the distributor. I think remember the Mercury News doing a story about how her garment workers made $64 a week or something to that regard. So clearly, I don't think she cared about that business from an ethical sense. It was a business that got her noticed for sure. I mean, she was on the Forbes 40 Under 40 list at one point, and she was considered in another elite list of global young global leaders. But again, as a player in Washington, which she's kind of set herself up to be or claims to be.
Well, that is her position. I mean, she has a position within the White House.
But
a very
that's
high-ranking
sort of
official.
The sticking point, right? When she said that quote you used, Joe, that she will, you know, she'll be out of her business for the foreseeable future because of the work she's doing in Washington. I think that statement is the part that gives everyone pause.
Yes.
What qualifications? I mean, I know it's been a long time that she's been there now, but what qualifications had she brought to the White House in the first place? And how is she weighing in on decisions that affect the nation with her resume?
Right. Her resume's like most notable things were managing $200+ million deals and converting hotels or, you know, former structures into hotel properties.
We got to go to a break, but one of my favorite lines in the article is Ms. Trump's decision comes as the Trump administration threatens to escalate its trade dispute with China, where many of her products are manufactured.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be back after this short break.
The sweethearts, they sat in the dark and they sparked. They hugged and they kissed in that dusty old dark. They sighed and they cried and they hugged and they kissed. But instead of marriage, they talked like this, honey.
So long, it's been good to know you. So long, it's been good to know you. So long, it's been good to know you. What a long time since I've been home.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Wednesday, the 25th of July, 7 minutes past 10 o'clock. Kaylin Brown is here. She is the chair of the communications department at the College of St. Rose in Albany, New York, a professor of journalism and our dear friend. We thank you for
being
here.
And a regular on the Media Project.
We are lucky to have her in all of those capacities.
I'm grateful to be here.
Jen Smith is also a wonderful journalist. She writes for the Berkshire Eagle and is a beat reporter, and we are thrilled that she joins us each and every Wednesday. Good morning.
Good morning.
And Alan Chartok is celebrating a birthday today, and we're very excited to be a part of the celebration, and we are inviting you, if you'd like to write some birthday greetings and send them to panel@wamc.org. We'll read those in a little bit as we wrap up the segment here. And Alan has some other letters.
I do, and a very special thank you to our board op, Mike, who has been playing the Weavers all morning. Nothing could make me happier.
So long, it's been good to know you.
Yeah, so long, it's been good to know you.
Yeah.
That really, by the way, for those people who don't really remember because you're not old enough, was a major hit on the jukeboxes. Yeah, so long, it's been good to know you. And, you know, as everybody broke up with their girlfriend or boyfriend, they would sing, "So long, it's been good to know you," and like that.
Jukeboxes. It's a long way from Spotify.
I know. We had one in our house. It had little bubbles that went on, a Wurlitzer up and down, and we had a key to it, and whoever had the key could hide their Pepsi Colas in there. Okay, forget it.
1955. The Weavers hit for the Weavers in 1955.
Yeah, and Nicholas says, and of course, it's a Woody Guthrie tune.
Correct.
Woody wrote.
And that was before I was born. I couldn't resist.
Yeah, well, it really dagger to my heart. Okay. And so Nicholas says, "Farm bailout. Good morning, panel. I think I still hear people speak of how great a businessman this idiot is, yet he does not pay his bills and declares bankruptcy serially. Today it's farmers, tomorrow will be automakers. What about the coal and steel workers? Does this guy not realize he cannot declare the country bankrupt and wipe out all the debt and bills with a court order?" And that's from Nicholas in Tilson. And then Patrick says, "Ivanka Goods, I still have two full six-packs of Billy Bear."
Billy Bear.
Was made. It was Billy's, what's his name?
Jimmy Carter's brother.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, made in America.
And, I'm sorry, they're saying products by other people. Yeah, okay, all right.
Don't you get it? Don't you see?
Okay. But Bob, he wasn't part of the administration.
Barbara, yeah, that's right. Barbara says, "Ivanka, does anyone know exactly what she is doing in Washington?" No. Anita says, "Farmers, dear panel, I'm appalled that my tax dollars are going to pay back farmers' losses due to Trump's ignorant policies. It's a payoff to keep their votes." And that's Anita from Kingston. And Eric says, "Dr. Putin's summit tapes transcript. With the official statement and video of the summit edited to remove the question of whether Putin wanted Trump to win, have we reached a new all-time low as a democracy? Absolutely horrifying," says Eric.
Let me say that. There's a word I didn't understand.
Oh, here. Please.
Oh, are they saying that the summit tapes were doctored?
I don't know.
But the official statement and video of the summit edited to remove... Has that been proven? Do we know that?
I don't know.
There's some conflicts of evidence there.
I didn't know that anybody had actually admitted to taping or recording the discussion.
I know there was some, like, I think The Atlantic did a piece on the transcripts itself and some discrepancies of, like, between the recording and the transcript, if I'm not mistaken. I've not known anything about any other.
But Joe's point is well taken. We've never heard that there is a tape, an official tape, of what went on between Putin and Trump, right?
Beforehand, no.
Not now. Yeah.
No, except.
You mean beforehand, meaning the
2 hours they met just with their interpreters. Right.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Okay, and Maureen says, "Focus on transcript editing. More substantive than Trump's snake lawyer's tape is the altering of transcript and video of the Helsinki press conference. That's right up there in terms of creeping Orwellian and Hitlerian behavior. A chill went up my spine. We're into Shadowland now," says Maureen. All right. And Linda says, election. Good morning. In the midterm elections, we must all get out and vote in mass. Only 37% of the population are Republicans. 75% who support Trump, which is only 23% of the population. Plus, they are less likely to hack an election where there is massive voting, and that is from Linda. Well, that's a very interesting point. We do know that Republicans tend to vote in larger numbers of their number. If you're following me on this, I know it's not articulate, but if you have an election and you have 37% Republicans and then the rest are Democrats or independents, those 37% are more likely to be motivated to vote. And I've always felt that the reason for that is you vote to protect what you have as opposed to protect what you want. Because if you were voting to protect what you want, then all those people who wanted health care or SNAP or things like that for their kids would be out there and voting, but they're not.
But go ahead.
If you want democracy, you would vote, right? If you want democracy or recognize that the democracy is under attack?
Well, yes. And that is what the question, you're exactly right, Caitlin. And that is what this election is going to be all about. What is the motivation? I mean, what is the energy behind either camp in this election? When Trump screws up the way that he's been screwing up, it has to be an embarrassment to some Republicans. Look, if you are a Republican a woman right now and you are hearing about, you know, all of the misogyny that goes on and comes out of Trump's mouth, either because of his various paying off of affairs or the rest of it, you have to be less motivated to go and vote than if you were, you know, in his really excited about his program.
No matter the stripe of woman you are, you would think that you would vote in this upcoming election based on the issues that have been at the forefront of an attack on women.
Well, you're right, of course, but there's another way to look at it. There are two ways to vote. You can vote with your going to the voting booth, or you can vote with your feet. And if you decide not to go and vote, that's a vote. That is a vote against your candidate.
I agree completely. Yeah.
All right. And Chuck says, 7:25, why would anyone be paying attention to polls anymore? All I hear after every recent election is how wrong the polls are. It seems that people are either really undecided before they give their decision to a pollster, or they lie. Not sure what it is, but there needs to be a new way to take stock of voters' frame of mind. Polls aren't working, don't you see? Says Chuck of Saratoga. Well, you know, you're right, Chuck, but what is that way? In other words, what is that way? So we do know that people go out and they, it leaves me very cold. CNN goes out and they say, okay, we're going to talk to the man or woman on the street and we're going to ask them. Somehow, they are now talking to two people instead of a representative sample. So they find one on either side, or they find two on one side and one on the other side. I'm not sure how that does the job that polling does or doesn't do. We need better polling, that's for sure.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, if you really want to get geekish about it, then you know you can always look at the poll methodology to see where the sample's coming from and understand, you know, at least have some better context for what the poll actually represents.
So, for example, in the Obama election, we knew there was a very strong African-American turnout, which is terrific. That's exactly why I think Deval Patrick probably ought to be the candidate right now, because I think if you want to replicate that and get an election, why did Cortese win? We've had a lot of mail on this and says, well, white voters voted for her. But in the end, she was more like her constituents than Crowley was. And that means a great deal.
Have you been to the Bronx?
Have I been to the Bronx?
Right. Well,
I went
to
school in the Bronx.
She
yeah.
is absolutely more like the people who live in the Bronx.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's exactly
good for the
right.
Bronx.
People think it's philosophical. I don't think it was necessarily philosophical. I think it's more you are more like who I am, and therefore I can vote for you. I could go into this at great length, but I had a cipher. I had somebody that I dealt with virtually every day, my best friend's mother, who was always teasing me about this and telling me she was going to vote for the Jewish candidate in the end after she kept talking about how the Italian candidate was the better candidate. You know, but people are going to vote for their own quite often. Now, we'll get letters and say, oh, no, that's not the way I vote. But it is the way we know people vote.
But maybe not the case in the last presidential election, as evidenced by some of the polling, which is, we know that was extremely flawed polling.
It was. Mm-hmm. It was. Chuck says, oh, yeah, we did that. Don't you see? I love what Chuck said at the end. Don't you see?
Yeah.
A great birthday gift. Rachel says, Pete Seeger, hello, lovely people. Always love the roundup. And following on today's musical theme, I sure hope that the day after Trump, also known as popular vote loser, is finally gone, you will play Pete Seeger singing Irene Goodnight. It was the first song that Mike played today, Irene Goodnight. It's my favorite. And then Trump and abuse from Amy, our very good friend Amy from Woodstock. I am a survivor of serious domestic abuse. Donald Trump shows every warning sign of a perpetrator. If you look up the power and control wheel, a tool used to educate people about DV and bullying, you will see that he displays almost every symptom. Abusers can be on a small personal level within a family or as large a scope as the world leader. A wise counselor told me, with a domestic abuser, insert bully or dictator, you will never win. And it goes on and on, but I think that that's the major point of her letter.
Thanks.
And then Tony says, farmers, panel, what happens to all the products that is not being sold? Thank you, Tony, from Millington. That's right. You know, I mean, some stuff gets plowed under as a result of this, and we'll see where it all goes.
Perhaps the products could go to some individuals who could benefit from them, the less fortunate.
All right, we have a couple of minutes and a whole lot of birthday greetings for the man of the hour here. So let's get to these. Barbara in Chatham says, "Happy birthday, Alan Chartok. We share the day, and I will admit to 76."
Yeah, well, you're a little behind.
Gracie in Sheffield sent a cute picture of a cat wearing a birthday hat. And says happy birthday.
That's
very nice. Dear Alan, happy birthday. We love you. And that's from Deb from Athens. Mary, who wrote earlier and said happy birthday to Alan. Nelson makes this point. I think it's good for all of us to keep this in mind. Birthdays are good to keep having them.
Better when you're on this side of the earth.
That's right. Better than the alternative. Kathleen says, I hope your day is filled with folk songs and peace. Very nice. And Robbie says, this is from a grateful listener for over 30 years, Alan. Thank you for your dedication, your courage, your humor, and your inspiration. Birthday greetings to Dr. Chartok. Janice says, sending love and gratitude to Alan from South Hadley, Mass. Barbara writes and says, happy, happy birthday, Alan, from your fellow great Barringtonian. Barbara Dean, thank you for playing the Weavers. It's Pete's 100th birthday next year.
Wow.
I like this one. Timothy says, may your coffin be constructed of the finest 100-year-old oak, which I will plant tomorrow. Barbara says, happy birthday to Alan from fellow Hunter graduate. 73, just other campus, have a good day. Anthony says, normally on any birthday, gifts are given to celebrate the passage of another year. On this occasion, the only thing I can think about is how much you've given to all of us. Your intelligence, integrity, and insight have been invaluable in navigating the insanity into which society is dangerously close to slipping into. The phrase, thanks for all you do, is all but a cliche, but is in this case quite apt, appropriate, and sincerely given, and that is from Anthony. Naomi, a regular correspondent, says, happy birthday, Alan, and wonderful to hear gender equality in the panel makeup today. happy birthday, Alan, from Chuck. Jim says, thank you for sharing your insights and wisdom, and have a beautiful day. Susan says, good morning, all. When I heard the Weavers singing Goodnight, Irene, at the beginning of the roundtable, my heart sank as I thought one of the Weavers must have died. About the time I realized they have all, unfortunately, already passed on, it was announced that it was Alan's birthday. So glad it was for a happy occasion. Thank you, Alan, for all of your wonderful work you do, not the least of which is keeping the memory of Pete and the Weavers alive, which you sure could use right now. I think this one is supposed to be sung, but I'm not going to do that. Susan says, happy birthday to you, happy birthday to you, happy birthday, dear Alan, happy birthday to you. Thank you for the wonderful, thoughtful radio station that you are the boss of. Wishing you another 70 years of good health, surrounded by the love of your family, and more WAMC. Crystal says, have a wonderful birthday, and may you have many more. We need more years with you in it. P.S. I like your music. Annie says, happy birthday, Alan. May you, your wife, and family always have a good health. Happy birthday, Alan, from Sherry. You are a hero. May all your birthday wishes come true. Roxanne says, I wish it were Alan's birthday more often. We love hearing the music that he plays and his political opinions, as always. And Richard simply says, happy birthday, Alan.
It sounds like for your next fun drive, you need to like make a special edition of birthday soundtrack and...
That's right.
Yeah, yeah, there you go.
Alan's playlist.
Yeah, there you go.
That's right. Alan's playlist. That's a good idea. Get the rights to that now.
So that would be a good CD.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah, we have to get the rights, but I don't know.
Yeah. Well, after a while.
But a few more
these
years.
These guys are so old.
Get public domain. Yeah. We're getting into that turf. So how are you celebrating?
Well, first I have to get my tire replaced.
Always a lovely way.
And then on Friday night, I'm sorry, we're having a tiny little party. That's all. And then it'll be on to waiting for the next one. Or for that oak casket.
For the oak casket in 100 years. We've noticed here at the radio station that Alan will mention how old he is, but it's not the number changes at the beginning of the year that he turns that. Do you know what I mean? So
he doesn't specify how old he is?
No, his age right now, the age that he is,
yes,
that he is today,
yes,
he's been using that for like 6 months.
Oh, yeah, no, I do. In other words,
so, you know, you're, it's like we do in the media, where you're always looking a day ahead.
That's right.
Well, it's also part of dulling.
I would never do that.
It's part of dulling the pain.
Right. So
you anticipate it, and you say, okay, I was 76, 77, you see?
As of January, he started saying he was 77.
I thought that's how old he was.
Now, my brother, my twin, identical twin brother, got so far ahead of himself doing the same thing that he, when he retired, his age was given as a year older than mine. And I said, I can't figure out how that happened.
It's quite the family tradition.
That's a psychological study. What does that stem from, that you would want to talk about being a year older before you are?
It's the avoidance of pain, that's all.
Yeah, I think it's just moving on to the next. Yeah, like looking ahead and realizing, oh,
it's
God,
acceptance of the inevitable.
What about carpe diem? What about happy today?
Forget it, Jack. Forget that.
Look who you're talking to.
I am. Have you seen the Mr. Rogers movie?
No, I have to go.
Alan, go see the Mr. Rogers movie.
Roselle,
go for your birthday.
She was like you. It's at the XXX, as we say.
All right. We have to go to a break. But thank you all. Happy birthday, Alan.
Happy birthday.
Happy. Thanks.